Welcome to Aging Revolution, the JAVA podcast. I'm Lisa Murray, and I'm joined by Jane Colony Mills from Loaves and Fishes, Rhonda Oliver from Feeding Green, Emily Foreman from JAVA, and Hannah Strauss from Move to Health and also the Hunger Action Coalition. So I thought we would start by just going over a general, just for our viewers who may not have a solid definition of food insecurity. So I looked it up, and it's the condition of not having access to sufficient food or food for an adequate quality to meet one's basic needs. So I think we can all agree on that. So if you would just take a few minutes for me to go around, tell me your position and what your organization does to address food insecurity.
At Loaves and Fishes, we don't turn anyone away based on where they live. But I think access is such a big word, you know, in terms of not having enough access. Access sometimes means they don't have transportation to get to somewhere to get food. Initially, it means you don't have enough money to buy enough food to get you through a month or to buy the right kind of food. And that's something you kind of touched on. So we're open 4 days a week. We have people who speak multiple languages during our distributions, and we're trying to give people a week's worth of food at each visit with a lot of fresh, perishable foods.
Okay, and I'm with Feeding Green in Stanersville, Virginia, Greene County. We run three different food programs there. We've been doing this for 30 years. Our home delivery program is our biggest, not our biggest program, but it's the program that reaches those that have trouble accessing food. They're mostly elderly, disabled, or those without transportation. We have a lot of even younger families now reach out to us for home deliveries, emergency type home deliveries. Say they've had surgery and can't drive for a while. One issue we do have is we do find that some of our elderly get so elderly that the groceries that we provide don't quite fit their need. They really need prepared meals. So that's an issue that we deal with in Greene County. We do deliveries on the first and third Wednesday of every month, as well as emergency deliveries. We also have a backpack program where we runs during the school year, where we offer nutritious food for kids during the school year. That has gone up like 68% this year from last year, just a tremendous jump. Our biggest program is our client choice program, where we're open 4 days a week. We're set up much like a grocery store. We tell people in place of prices, we have limits, and they just take themselves around. They kind of bag their food as they go. We're open every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, and Wednesday afternoon. So we do, and the Wednesday afternoon and the Saturday is new since COVID, and those are some of our biggest days now. So those are, we are seeing a lot of families with children right now. That's growing. Every population is growing ever since 2021. We saw the elderly population take a huge jump. And, you know, we're talking mid-80s to in their 90s, you know, first time ever own their own homes, but, you know, their own fixed incomes. And the inflation just started going up in 2021 with the war in Ukraine, and it has not stopped.
Mm-hmm. Hi, Emily Foreman, Director of Wellness and Enrichment Services with JAVA. And a component of our Wellness and Enrichment Service program is our community senior centers and also our home delivered meals program. So we have a senior center location in every county within the planning district. And within those centers, we provide community center programming, but also that includes like a midday meal. And I think over this last fiscal year, we served close to 70,000 meals at our community centers. So we're proud of that number. And we also have our home delivered meals program as well. And a lot of that comes through people who receive those meals. That comes through our aging service coordinators who are out in the community and will meet with individuals who are just identified as food insecure and are needing access to resources and nutrition.
And I'm Hannah Strauss. I'm the coalition coordinator for Move to Health Equity, which is a coalition that's been running long before me that works with UVA Health And the Good Foundation, and is co-chaired by Jackie Martin and Greg Winston, and has under it four action teams that, and one of the action team focuses is on health, is on healthy food systems. And in that role, and also expanded upon from that role, I'm the facilitator for the Blue Ridge Hunger Action Coalition. And I think separate from anyone else here, I don't work in anything that's directly feeding people or directly meeting the need. Both of those are convening places where the Hunger Action Coalition is convening mostly of folks that are either in the charitable food scene, the mutual aid food scene, and are locally locally contributing to meet the need on the ground. So a space where people can talk and know what's going on in the community and share information, which has been a growing need, and for especially since 2020, of like everything has just been getting more expensive, people are having more need, and then just exacerbated by every other thing that's going on, the cuts to benefits and other things that I'm sure we'll talk about.
Yes. So that's actually a great lead in. Thank you. And then a great perspective, because I mean, you all had a good pulse on what are the main issues. I mean, so many changes are going along, but going on, but what would you say, you know, are the major challenges currently affecting access to food?
What we hear a lot at our center sometimes is there's a transportation issue that comes up a lot, and that can even be a hindrance towards their accessibility to getting to the center to participate at times. If, you know, we partner with Jaunt to provide transportation often, and but there are some members who live outside of that area, and so getting to the center to access the food and access the resources can be a challenge, and then that also can impact their ability to get to the store, to get to a food bank, to get food. You know, our, I didn't touch on this, but our Home Deliver Meals clients, in order to receive, become eligible to receive the food, they often are unable to access food from either getting to the grocery store, don't have anyone who can help them get to the grocery store. So transportation is definitely a big one. And just care partners, people who are there within their home to help support the accessibility to food. So those are two big factors. What we hear about a lot.
Right.
And I think that one of the things that Emily touched on earlier was that a lot of people can't cook anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, a lot of people, full stop, can't cook. But and that's one of the things that we've tried to address with, and I know in both our pantries, we've tried to bring in somebody to show people how to enjoy some of the foods that we give out. So we're really not even aware of how much of the food we give out might be going to waste, because people are looking at it and saying, oh, I don't know what to do with that spaghetti squash. I think the other big concern right now is what's changing with SNAP benefits, and that's the most immediate impact. Medicaid mm-hmm. is going to come in next year, but we learned today that we thought that anybody with a green card was still going to qualify to receive SNAP, and we've just learned that they won't unless they've been here more than 5 years. So that's really frightening, because those are big immigrant families who have continued to grow after they've arrived in America, and we're already struggling to provide 2 weeks of food for them
mm-hmm.
in a month. And then the senior population is a whole different, it's a behavioral difference. Mm-hmm. A lot of them won't admit that they need help.
I was just thinking about
that. They will feel that that somebody deserves this more than me, families with children, in other words, and that they won't come to us. They won't come and take advantage of what's available.
It's the sharing of the information to them about the resources. It's tricky, because if you address it in the past, when we were sharing SNAP benefits and you address the group, like a peer driven kind of thing to be vulnerable and admit that there is some assistance needed. So then it transitioned into trying to meet with people one on one to say, this is what's happening. Would you like to take advantage of it? But it is a very, there's some pride wrapped up in that. And you're right, just this unwillingness to say, I need this, versus it's like they're taking it from someone else.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Even the home deliveries that we offer, some of them are uncomfortable with someone coming to their house.
Yeah.
I received a card today. It was on my desk from a lady that it was emergency type delivery. And she let me know that she was, you know, so pleased. The gentleman was so nice and polite and put her groceries away, helped her and, you know, stayed with her and talked with her. And she was like, you need to promote him. It was a really cute card. But she let me know she was very leery of having anyone come to her house. So sometimes it's just breaking through that barrier, too, that families aren't accustomed to this. Mm-hmm.
A buildup of trust is really important. Right. You have to trust the provider and us as agencies and partners, knowing who are those, what are those trust points that we can make sure they have our information. Absolutely. You know?
Do you mind sharing, how did you get her to the point where she was willing to take?
I didn't even know who she was. It was the first visit we had ever made. So I don't know if she's new to the area, but she was new to the need. Or maybe she got so desperate. I mean, he said that there was not much food in the house. So I think she waited to get to at that point. And some of our elderly, they don't reach out. It's their kids that reach out on their behalf. Mm-hmm. We see that all the time. Yeah. They're the ones that call and get the information, and so we can get them into the system and get food for them. So proxies are a huge thing at our pantry, where someone else has permission to shop and take the food to them. So that's huge at our pantry.
And you also
do. Yes. Okay. Yeah. That really started with COVID, where there were a lot of people who were not comfortable coming out. And so if they can find a designate that they trust to come and collect the food for them, we've been doing that. I mean, we have agency pickups on Tuesdays and Fridays that aren't even published hours. They're only given directly to agencies. And so someone will come on the behalf of 10 residents at the crossings and pick up food for them every Tuesday. And, you know, we've had to get kind of relaxed about it, except then you hear, oh, somebody was picking up food for me and I didn't get it. And that just crushes us because, you know, we're like, wow. So, you know, we've had to kind of tighten up a little bit and just make sure that everybody who's listed is approved, still approved, you know, because family relationships change. You know, you can say that my mother-in-law can pick up and then she's not your mother-in-law anymore. So you just never know. But I will say, with the senior population, they're very reticent to admit the need for help because they feel like they worked their whole lives, they were productive, and they should be able to live on that Social Security. And what they're finding is that they can't. The cost of housing is just so prohibitive in Charlotte.
Yeah.
And heaven forbid you need additional care on top of the housing and the food and all the basic needs, right. And you've got to pay for that, or you've got to supplement it with some sort of payment.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So are you finding that, I know that, so food is kind of a piece of the puzzle, right? Like, it's just one thing. There's so many contributing factors. You mentioned housing, transportation. Mm-hmm. You know, what else is contributing to people needing help with?
So it's easier to get free food than to get anything else for free. Mm-hmm. So their needs come from maybe their property taxes for some of our elderly people. Mm-hmm. You know, real estate taxes, those things are going up as well. Their insurances are going up. If they have a vehicle expense, we're actually right in front of the highest subsidized housing in Greene County, and we're hearing that those apartments are, it's just, one gentleman let me know his rent is going up $500, and I'm like, wow, if everyone's goes up $500, how are these people going to afford it? So it's not even that. It's that food is easier to get for free. Mm-hmm. It's easier than to get any other bill paid for. So what we food pantries are doing more now than ever is supplementing people's income so that they can get through the month.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And that's many families only come when they really need us. And that is what is saving us right now. I don't know if you see that, but I certainly see it. That if we had all the families that came to us, if they came every week, we could not keep up. We could not keep pace. I mean, you know, we're volunteers. I'm the only paying position. So, and, you know, we work with about 170, 180 volunteers a month. And we still could not keep pace if every single family. So
much less have the supply of food.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and we go through it so fast.
Yeah, we blow through it. And then we're feeling a tightening from both of our major sources.
Meat has been.
Yep. Groceries and
hard to come by.
Grocery stores and the food bank have been having a hard time keeping up with the need that we're seeing.
Yeah. Grocery stores are holding on to their food.
Yep. Until they can try to sell it.
You probably noticed yourself when you go to the grocery store, it's not quite the variety you used to could choose from. So their selection's smaller and they need to make a profit too. So we're getting less from them as well.
So that's interesting. I think people may not look at it from the side of the nonprofit who's trying to help. So what challenges are you facing? And Hannah, you might be a good one because you kind of have a global view that organizations are facing. And of course, you can certainly answer yourself. But that maybe people don't know about. Like you mentioned, higher prices, you're not getting as much food. You know, obviously, at least I think the demand is rising.
Oh, yeah.
But yet your resources are shrinking. So how do you deal with that?
I think it's every single piece of this being compounded and having been compounded for years. And like Rhonda said, like specifically with Feeding Green, they've been all volunteer until very recently. Mm-hmm. And the pressure for volunteers who are serving the community to be working, and not Loaves and Fishes is also a lot of volunteers, yeah. But like the amount of just pressure that it puts on everyday people to take care of their communities and then watching as it's also happening to them. So people who have always, you talk about like and someone who's in their 90s, who's still able to get around transportation wise. Okay. Still like in a rural area, but something changes and they can no longer get themselves around. They have a change in the care need they need now. They're like, children or family can't take them around, and then increase in pricing. I think not to keep talking about Greene County, but I know Greene County has a similar tax rate to Albemarle County.
Yeah.
Wow,
it's crazy. It's
not a place to move to.
Right. I know. It's so pretty. Right?
It's so pretty though. And then you think about in rural spaces. Even if we look at to the south in Buckingham, there's so little opportunity for you to build trust with folks. You think about the trust that's needed, especially with seniors, of there's a lack of transportation of seeing people, the lack of opportunities for in-person appointments, doctor's appointments, going to the grocery store, transportation, any of this. And it's all just being reduced and reduced and reduced. And then everyone who is volunteering their time or doing this for the community is also having a reduction in time. They may need to take on another job. They may need to do all these other things. And so it's just the compression of every joint of every part of the food system. And it's just under pressure.
And we saw it coming.
Yes.
We've talked about this perfect storm for years now. And yeah. I remember maybe it was 2 or 3 years ago that we were all asked if we were ready for it.
Mm-hmm.
And we were ready. I mean, at that moment and at that time, we felt we were ready. And it's lasted longer than we expected, and it's gotten worse. You know, I mean, grants are harder to get. I don't know.
There's more competition.
Right? More competition. We're getting smaller amounts. Mm-hmm. When
it certainly speaks to the importance of these kinds of connections with,
mm-hmm. Oh yeah,
with the work that's being done. You know, when you're speaking about an individual who's living in a rural area with limited access to potential health care, to food insecurity, perhaps the changes in health and transportation and access. I mean, that's where agencies, and not like JAVA is this cure-all for everything, but agencies like JAVA and others who have these locations that can bring people in and have, you know, access to a nutritious lunch, and that's a critical
piece. You all do the meal, mom's meals.
Yeah,
we do for home delivered meals. We partner with Mom's Meals currently, yeah, and they are a chilled meal that gets
because that's what we refer people to in our county.
Yeah,
that we can see that the groceries really don't help. They really need the.
And if it's meals. You know, aging service coordinator will go out to meet with the individual or whomever to determine eligibility to receive that mom's meal. If for whatever reason the eligibility doesn't quite line up, then it's a referral to, okay, so if this can't help you, what can we do next?
Mm-hmm.
And those kinds of checklists and referrals are really important in that kind of situation, I think. So yeah, no, it's just even more important to connect and talk through.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And I think we've come a long way. You know, in the 8 years I've been at Loaves and Fishes, I've seen the communication really ramp up and a lot of these collaborative conversations where we're really trying to share information and make sure that we're supporting each other. I think, you know, we speak about competition, that's for funding. But I don't think we're competing for clients.
No.
Sharing.
We're sharing. Yeah, we're trying to refer to other places because none of us can do this alone.
Yeah.
And the thing is, it's also important to like have food insecurity and the lack of access to food impacts health outcomes.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're talking about like a nutritious midday meal for someone, and then they're getting the meal, it's prepared, it's ready, it's warmed, it's good. And then if they're given food and they need to know how to make it, or they're not feeling well, or things aren't working at home, then that it may not be as nutritious as it should be.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just,
And I think about for getting food into rural communities in particular, I know like Mama's Meals has been a real lifesaver for a lot of people because Meals on Wheels was really trying to bust into the rural community in Nelson County, but the thing about rural communities is it's so hard. You go down one road and it doesn't mean you're going to be able to go to the other side of the county any faster than if you started at the very top. Nelson County is all winding roads.
Yeah.
And a lot of people don't have service. And that's putting this extra pressure on volunteers who are like, well, I live near Scottsville, but that doesn't mean that I can deliver all the meals on the way down to Buckingham or in any other direction. So I think it's all about like the network and the communication.
I'm really glad to hear that. That's important to hear. Because with the element of Mom's Meals, it oftentimes is delivered by like a delivery company. But we actually worked with them and created a really strong like volunteer driver base with Mom's Meals, which was a component that was important. But that element was always like wanting to make sure that it really was being utilized in the right ways.
Yeah,
it's good.
Yeah, well, and outside of just the GPS maybe not being able to get you to the place, we have places up some of the hollows in the mountains that my van just that tire just spin. It's so steep,
right? Oh, that's and terrifying.
It's yeah. After you have to straddle the ruts in the road. I mean, we have some places that you have to get the right person with the right vehicle and that's willing to do it.
I've also heard about the issue of, especially in rural communities, I've not heard it as much with Charlotte drivers in Charlottesville, folks delivering rural communities. There are places that they won't drive.
Oh, absolutely.
There are places in Buckingham that I know there's some, I won't get into the family dynamics, but I know that there's rural family dynamics that impact who is comfortable delivering to who.
Right.
And so making sure that you're like, oh, well, what side of the county are you going to, or whose farm is that?
And it's funny because once a road or an area gets a name, it sticks, even if it's not like that anymore. So we deal with a lot of that in Green County.
But it's a lot of trust. It's a lot of building trust with folks. And I think that's the hardest part is having the time and capacity and then seeing people face to face. Because there's also so many scams now. There's so many people calling and trying to get people online and doing all this stuff. So, like, the in-person is so important.
Mm-hmm.
I think about Java Community Center is also well aware in the Yancey School or the Yancey Community Center. Mm-hmm. They're just critical.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Emily, you mentioned something, and everyone's touched on it, and that was that nutrition piece and the long-term impact of, not having nutritious food or lack of food. So can we just talk? I know both of you have.
Yeah, I'm sure we're both part of Fluidger Food Bank's
Healthy Pantry Initiative.
Healthy Pantry Partner, I think.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, we were very blessed during the COVID years. There was so many opportunities to move into the health field for food pantries. And we were very blessed, and I would say you all were too, to move into that area where we can, we've worked closely with the Extension Office. We've worked closely with the Blue Ridge Health District. We've had the free, no-cost farm stands come to Green, and they're still doing that. We've lost some of our resources with the Extension Office. We used to offer cooking classes. they were geared towards seniors, and some were geared towards families with children. And those were like 4 to 6 week classes. We're no longer able to provide that. We have continued our food demonstrations even without an extension agent. They tell us that one's coming back, but we haven't seen it yet. So we use our own volunteers to offer food demonstrations. And we've gotten into offering resources. You know, we have an area in our pantry that's just nothing but resources. We know that if we can connect mm-hmm. a family with any outside resource, a family with WIC, a family with Mom's Meals, we have a Tuesday's Table in our area that also provides every Tuesday a hot meal. And if we can connect them with that, that's going to make our resources stretch even further. Mm-hmm. So that's how we look at the resource part. But yeah, you know, there was a time during COVID where we had so much food that some families could pretty much live off of what we had. We don't have that anymore.
It's just like.
But we're back to supplemental. We're absolutely back to supplemental. Yeah. We don't have that wide variety. Yeah. We don't have the resources to offer, you know, fresh milk, eggs. We have to buy at Walmart. And families can only get eggs once a month because that's about all we can afford. I don't even know how many eggs we buy, probably 200 dozen eggs a week. I know you all go through many more.
So many eggs.
Nothing.
3,100 dozen.
Wow.
Yeah. So that, I mean, that's become the biggest price point of anything other than staff. Because we do have a fully staffed, I mean, we are staffed. With 8 full-time and 7 part-time, and then we use 125 volunteers a week. But the milk and eggs that we buy, it's huge.
Yeah.
Huge expense. And yes, it's saving people money. So our feeling has always been, if we can save you a week's worth of your groceries in a month,
right,
we're happy to do it.
Right.
Some people come 2 weeks. And that's kind of, that's where we set a limit, because we are doing a week's worth. Mm-hmm. But I think one of the things we also miss is just that there's so little access from these far out, these rural counties and the mm-hmm. haulers. You know, I was impressed by that at the Map to Health, the latest Map to Health report that came out, that's done by Brewer Health District and UVA in Sentara. And they deliberately collected most of their data in Nelson this year. And they kept hearing from people, we can't access healthy food, which leads to a healthier life, because we can't get there and people won't come to us. And that just broke my heart.
Wow.
That Medicaid rides won't come get them because they're on a road that you have to straddle the rest. And, so it's very real.
That sentence alone just linked everything together and covered every
So it's incredible to think that people are not healthy, not only because they can't get healthy food, because they can't get to health care. And then we do things like reducing the rural... was it the Augusta Health Center that's just had to cut some of its rural outreach points for healthcare? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it's just heartbreaking, because people live where they have a roof over their head. Mm-hmm. They're not going to move to Charlottesville because they're closer to healthcare and food.
And that's another thing, is they have the right to age where they choose, to live where they choose.
Yeah.
So it's how do the communities come together to help support the aging process?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
It's something that we talk about a lot at Move to Health Equity, of the fact that there aren't enough doctor practices, and the rural, like, individual private practices just don't exist in the same capacity. And so what that means to overall access. I was also thinking about the Map to Health data, because in Charlottesville, in Fifeville, that's also like a food desert, or food apartheid is the more accurate term, because it's an intentional reduction in the access to food that a certain population has. But on, like, what does that mean for nutrition of if someone doesn't have a grocery store in their county, in their region, and they're in any sort of transportation access? In Buckingham, I think there's one grocery store. Mm-hmm. And it's in Dillon, which is the top of the county. So you just think about what exists where people are, and how are they having access to that and aging in that area.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I just thought of it. Speaking of, I know you all do such a good job, and anyone who's in that field of working together, what do you think, how are healthcare providers, is there a missing piece that would help, if someone goes to the doctor and they say, oh, I recognize this need. Like, we're talking about elderly people who are hesitant to get help. So is there something that doesn't exist that would help?
Well, I don't know if I think there are certain areas that just aren't elevated enough or focused on enough, and that there's not always some links between health conditions and how they can be linked to poor nutrition or food insecurity, and that there is an understanding that if you eat better or focus more on that, that can positively impact your health. And also the reducing of the stigma of asking for support and assistance. And I don't necessarily see that as more much in maybe the healthcare capacity, but how we as partners who are working with these populations and with this topic talk about these programs and work on integrating specific language about, the stigma of seeking support and assistance with it and how that's addressed. I think it requires maybe a creative approach. It requires talking about it as partners and then going into the community or talking about it when we're doing board presentations, board of supervisors, whatever it needs. But I think that's an important element.
And I think we lost a really important support system with the community health workers that the Blue Ridge Health District had trained, and they were one of the first workforces to be cut when federal funding was cut. And it's just heartbreaking because they were trained to be a patient advocate. They were trained to go out and help people comprehend what this means. Because I think people who go to a doctor trust their doctor, but if they don't even get there, then they've got nobody bridging that gap and helping them understand that this health condition that you're suffering from, whatever it is, diabetes, obesity, congestive heart failure, is tied to diet. And how do you correct that? How do you? And often you can't. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the thing that breaks mm-hmm. my heart is when we see people with no teeth. Mm-hmm. And there is no dental care, and mm-hmm. and they just have given up, and they know what they can eat, and they know what they can blend and consume, mm-hmm. and they're not at all, don't seem to be terribly worried about it, but it would, it's because that ship has sailed and they can't catch it up. But what we're trying to do is show a newer generation how important it is to actually bite into an apple and, be able to mm-hmm. consume some of this food that is available to them that's actually good for you.
It's wonderful when there's presentations given at our community center locations, or, we have nutrition information, health information we send out to our home delivered meals clients. But specifically when presentations are given and there's those light bulb moments where they're like, oh, okay, well, if I recognize that this impacts this and this can impact that, or if I'm struggling, I can contact this agency or that person. Mm-hmm. And you see these these connections light up. And it just can make even someone who's living alone with limited access, but does come to our center, that when they go back home, they don't feel as alone because they know they there are these partnerships mm-hmm. in place. And sometimes it's just knowing that we're all kind of working together, which could tie into the healthcare piece of things, is just making sure that our physicians, especially in those communities, know about everyone. How is that information shared? I mean, obviously that speaks to community health workers.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But, that I think is a bit of a missing piece because not every, medical professional physician is going to necessarily maybe house the responsibility of knowing all of these human service agencies and food pantries and organizations and give this pamphlet out of everybody of listing everything to someone. So, yeah.
And sometimes we'll get somebody who's just been diagnosed with something and they've been given this list of food. This is what you should eat to feel better. And
we do have a lot of fresh produce.
And we do the best we can with it.
Yeah. I mean, we have.
But they're completely floored by it sometimes, and that's because they've never consumed it before. Yeah. And they're like, what do I do with this?
And that requires energy and requires motivation, which is tied to food and the initiative to do that.
And it tastes good.
It tastes good. That's a huge thing.
You know, eggplant. I use eggplant, poor eggplant, as the example all the time because it looks great. You know, when you have the skin on and then you cook it and it turns gray and you're like, I don't know.
But it's good.
It's delicious, but a lot of people are terrified of it.
Now, do you all still do the, like, the cooking demonstrations of the things that they're getting in their cart for that week?
So we try to, yeah.
And have you found that that is...
Yes, and then the little mini farmers market, not similar to the ones that you guys have, where people just come up and choose. But we'll often put some of the more unusual stuff in those areas. So what did we have this week? I can't remember what Matt's going to be doing at farmers market today. And that's what we'll put, either the very few's. So the big box stores, Sam's, at Costco, like these peeled coconuts that have a straw in them. And you can... you can drink coconut water out of them, and you can actually eat the flesh as well, but you have to like bash it with a hammer or something like that, or throw it on the ground or whatever. But we give out the unusual stuff there, so that's where we do all the unusual meats. The tongue, the tripe, the liver, anything that people may not take easily, we're not going to give that to anybody.
See, our families love that stuff. It depends
on where you're from.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And they can choose it because
they choose everything. So what we do is we'll have a volunteer that helps promote a certain item. Like we've got the most beautiful radishes now. And I had a volunteer, she's like, oh, that looks delicious. I was like, good, try one and tell me what it tastes like. And she's like, this is delicious. And she was eating it like an apple. I was like, okay, your job today is to tell everyone how delicious that is.
That's great.
So that's how we try to promote. And of course, we'll use radishes for our food demonstrations. We've had a lot of radishes lately.
Yes, we have, yeah.
Radishes and turnips are hard.
Yeah, we've done some roasted ones. And they're better than you roast them with other vegetables, too. So, you know, because they're a little watery. They're very watery.
Mm-hmm. And one thing I was just thinking of when you're just mentioning that, and just thinking about, you know, the missing pieces, like the identifier of food insecure. Like,
yes.
What is it? Do healthcare professionals, would they be able to say, I'm sharing with you that I think that I would identify you as food insecure, and because you are in this category, I think it's best that you contact da-da-da-da-da. And, you know, we had those mobile food pantries a while back with Blue Ridge, and I remember out at Nelson, they had the mobile, and the line of people waiting for food was unbelievable. But their belief was, if they're in line and they're waiting 45 minutes for food, we're not going to turn them away. They must need it. So if you're looking at that huge line of people identify themselves, they may not even identify themselves as food insecure. They're like, I just need groceries.
And I can't afford it right now.
Yeah. So that, could you imagine if people really identified that, the numbers of food insecurity might just...
Well, just the whole term alone is food insecure.
Yeah.
First of all, it says insecure, which means maybe you don't like yourself.
Right. And
you know, if that's what you understand.
Yeah.
So I remember when we first started working with some of the docs at UVA, and their terminology was, do you not have enough food to get through a year? And I was like, hang on, a year? Yeah. I mean, who knows, first of all, because it's a year away.
Yeah.
But, you know, it should be a month or a week or something smaller that people can conceive of.
Yeah. Right, because I'm thinking day to day.
They are.
If I can put gas in my car tomorrow. Yep.
Do I have enough gas to even get to the
right?
You know, it's all for that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And when you put that term insecure, people are less likely. We're talking, you know, about especially older people who are not as willing to accept help. Well, of course, if you're going to label me as insecure, I'm not that, so I don't need help.
Yeah.
That actually is another point of, how do you measure, you know, all of the changes happening nationally and the measurement of food insecurity? Like, how do you? Is that something you even worry about with, like, how many people I'm helping? How do I measure this? How do I know that I'm being successful? And is that even something that you,
I mean, impacts you? We used to do surveys. We haven't done one in a long time because, I mean, honestly, we're just getting slammed. The day-to-day work is just keeping us so busy that I haven't even had time to think about the survey. But I know in the earlier years, the Blue Ridge Health department would make referrals. They would call us in Feeding Green if they had a family that was from Green that they felt was food insecure, and I would personally visit those homes to try to get an assessment. And many of them, I very little food in the house. Their condition was clearly not to where they could even do a lot of cooking. And that's where we started, you know, looking at the mom's meals that Java offered and the other resources for prepared foods. But to get an outside referral is really good for us. That tells us a lot before we even go there to visit.
Yeah.
But, you know, some of them, it works out good. We do specially packed boxes as well for our home deliveries. You know, we have a general thing that we send, but if we have a family that they only want the fresh items, you know, then we just pack the fresh box for them. So, but families can come every week to our pantry. And my gauge on that is, as long as I have produce on those tables, we're going to let them come. We might be low on some other things, but if we've got the fresh produce, so that's, you know, we won't cut services until we see our produce go away. Our meat has definitely suffered. We've purchased meat for the first time ever in our history in the last month.
Mm.
And it's been 4 pallets we've purchased.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, so we've never ever purchased meat like that, but it simply wasn't available. So,
and it's what people want the most of.
Oh, right.
They want that more.
Feels full. Yeah. That's pretty. Yeah. Yeah.
And that's something we've really learned from some of our international visitors is that they use meat as a flavoring in a stew, whereas we're still eating a chicken breast. Mm-hmm. You know, we want or a steak or something. We want that piece of meat on our meat, on our plate. That means that we're healthy,
right?
That we're gonna feel full because it's got a lot of bulk to it, a lot of nutrition, a lot of protein.
Mm-hmm.
We've tried to split the conversation on protein from animal based to plant based. Not with
that's the generational thing.
And the ones who self identify, we can accommodate. Yeah, you know, we try to accommodate that as much as possible. But you know, most people, I had a gentleman really kind of harangued me a couple of weeks ago about how he did not get the right kind of meat. And I was like, you know, we can't give you what we don't have.
Yeah, we just don't have it.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. So yeah. It's hard. Mm-hmm. It's hard to meet what people anticipate they need. So
one of the things that is clear is that you have to be able to pivot at really moments notice. So
we don't know anything about it.
I'm still whirling.
Yeah, well, one of the things that came out today was that, you know, SNAP benefits may not be available in November. So that just made me start thinking about, like, how do you pivot? Like, how do you get that news or any news or say, oh, I'm not going to have meat this week or now I need to pay a break and we don't have the funds to do this. So it's a constant. It seems to be a constant. There needs to be an ability to continually change. So talk about how you do that and how you're still able to be successful and what you do and help people.
I can go a little bit first, but they're much better at the pivot and have much more experience in pivoting than I do. I can talk about the SNAP change. I think one thing that I've seen over the past, like, 3 years of me being really invested in the food scene or in the food access scene is that the communication between people giving free food to communities is like the key to pivots. It's the fact that folks are talking to each other and like, how do we talk about free meat together? Like, where are you buying those eggs from? What's the price you're getting those eggs at? What are we going to do about this? How can we bulk buy these better? Like, if I buy this, can we trade this? Or, hey, this produce isn't going to make it on the day-to-day. Like, this produce isn't going to make it over the weekend. Can you distribute it at your distro? But in the bigger of, hey, I got a meeting with DSS, and I heard that this is what the new update is. Mm-hmm. And then sharing that. And then people attending that meeting are sharing with people who couldn't attend the meeting. And making sure that that information gets shared. I think it's not just a generosity of, like, folks who are picking up at distros for their friends and family, people who are volunteering their time. It's not just that generosity, but it's like stems from the whole operation of we're all doing this together. We're trying to make sure that everyone is fed together and sharing information is mm-hmm. like a key part of that. That's mm-hmm. how I've seen y'all pivot, especially as I've been learning.
Mm-hmm. Well, and even things like the free fridges. Those have popped up out of community. I don't think there are any green yet of it. Yeah, they're just, but it started with a kitchen mm-hmm. who was prepping meals that you could buy for your family, but then they're sort of putting excess in a free refrigerator near Visible Records mm-hmm. off of Carlton?
Yes.
One of the Carltons?
Yes, it's on Broadway.
Okay. And it's, you know, and people can just go and take what they need. Mm-hmm. And hopefully are just taking what they need rather than cleaning out the entire thing. Some people will do that, though, you know, because they feel like their need is greater than everybody else's. And so that's one of the things you have to kind of accept in this industry. And it's hard. And, mm-hmm. you know, we pivoted hard during COVID because we realized we were an essential business and mm-hmm. we had to be here. Mm-hmm. For people who couldn't even afford to go to the grocery store.
You're essential.
Yeah, they were an essential business.
The rest of the world's going to have right. shelter in place, not you.
Right. And, you know, so we're doing stuff in masks and gloves for a year, I think it was.
Oh, yeah.
It was a lot. We loaded
vehicles for a year and a half.
Yep.
Loaves and Fishes went from serving inside.
Inside to outside.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And everything now has remained outside because we're able to do so many more families mm-hmm. and more quickly. We have a menu that we go over with everybody and mm-hmm. they don't listen to half what we say. So then when they get their food, they're like, oh, I didn't know. I told you I wanted spaghetti squash. And we're like, well, you did. We asked you. So, but you know, it's a stressful time to have to ask for help. It's always stressful to have to ask for mm-hmm. help. It doesn't have to do with the time of year or decade or anything like that. It's hard. And so, you know, some people manifest that in anger or in frustration. And so I think what a lot of people don't realize is in this industry, we have to develop a pretty calm, understanding demeanor in order to be able to respond to mm-hmm. behaviors that are not the greatest. So
yeah, and you know, we're not the only ones seeing what's happening. Our communities are seeing what's happening. And what I've noticed in Green and for Feeding Green, you know, we've got our programs in place. We've got our processes down. We've got the best volunteers you could ever ask for. I tell people all the time, I couldn't have hired better people. Mm-hmm. We're seeing our schools step up. We're seeing our churches step up. Now, we started in a church, so we're already have a lot of faith-based, you know, presence. But our churches are stepping up big time. I just looked at our latest financial report for the quarter that just ended. And pre-COVID, our churches were catching up to our individual donations. And even some quarters, they were surpassing it, which is huge, okay? And COVID just totally changed that. You know, the individuals just skyrocketed and churches went way down. Well, our churches are stepping up to the plate, and they're not only stepping up financially, they're stepping up. They want to volunteer. What can my church do on a once a month or a twice a month? And, you know, I'm trying to get them on a, you know, like, okay, first and third Wednesday or whatever, you know, to make it easy for us to remember, because, you know, keeping track of everything, scheduling everything is complicated too. And so we're seeing a lot. We're seeing businesses, you know, step up. Businesses in the county. We don't have that many, but the ones that we have, they're very supportive. They want to help. They want to do something. So we're plugging them in anywhere we can, and we're trying not to extend our hours too much. So we're trying to, you know, just because we're exhausted.
Right.
I mean, you know, we're there 6 days a week. We've got a full staff 6 days a week. You know, we're either handing out food or we're bringing it in and getting it on the shelves and restocking, reorganizing, you know, going through the food, making sure it's all, the dates are good, that type thing.
A lot. Capturing those efforts is so important. And I love hearing, like, there's all these community people and organizations, companies stepping up and supporting and helping. And I think,
and it's such a blessing right now, because we're like so exhausted from the last 6 years. It's never let up. It's never stopped. The numbers just continue. You know, we saw 53 new families last month. New.
That's
totally new.
That's,
I mean, an average of 48 new families in 2024.
Yeah.
And we're still at an average of 47 new families this year. And you probably see higher than
that. We have a 20% increase from last year. Just in general, in terms of who's coming.
Yeah, it's 25% of all of our visits this year have been from new families.
Mm-hmm.
So that's just crazy.
Just so it's not like the other families stopped coming.
No.
Right.
Yeah. Right. But we don't have what we used to have. So some families don't come as often. And some families, you know, they'll tell us. I know the need is greater. Other people have greater needs than me. They can see we don't have what we used to have. So they'll say, I try not to come as often.
Oh.
And, you know, we just tell them, you come as often as you need to come. You know, we're here. We do have the basics.
We do.
Yeah. We you know, your basic staple food items, canned, dry, fresh.
Mm-hmm. And if you can save money by getting that for free from us, then you have money to go buy the meat.
Yeah, come here first,
yeah,
and then go,
and then go to the grocery store.
That's what we do. Mm-hmm. So,
you know, I was thinking about, I'm sorry, Lisa, but I was thinking about the people stepping up to help. And I wonder if it's kind of like a reverse thing. When you feel helpless, if you become helpful, that makes you feel better. You know, if that, I wonder if that's kind of driving it. That there's a lot going on. There's a lot of things to keep up with right now. And if you feel helpless by that, that's one way you can make a difference, mm-hmm. is to step up to Feed and Green or somewhere and help the others.
Right.
And I know that's what happened during COVID. The reason we got so many individual donations, because people were just sitting at home saying, thank goodness, I don't have to go to the office. Yeah.
And watching the news.
Yeah. I mean, I'm in a great situation, so I'm going to give you some money. Because you're doing the hard work.
Yeah, but it's crazy. We lost literally 80% of our volunteers, like, overnight.
Yep.
Nobody. During COVID. But, yeah, we got, like, what, 200% more?
Yeah.
You know, UVA shut down, the school shut down,
we got all the
teachers, food. Their whole families were coming to help. So
how can our listeners get involved? I mean, how, hopefully, they're moved, and y'all are doing such great work. But if someone's listening and they don't know how to help, you know, what would you suggest?
I mean, I would begin to kind of think about if you're someone you know or yourself is experiencing issues with accessing food, getting to the grocery store, feeling tight with budget, and being able to, like, having to decide between, like, prescriptions and going to the grocery store, paying the bills, or just at that point, we're like, should I even consider, mm-hmm. you know, absolutely don't feel a stigma about it. Don't feel embarrassed about it. Even the label of food insecurity, like, there is security in seeking assistance and support. No one can get through life without it. And to not feel, you know, embarrassed by that. And if, or, you know, a loved one, neighbor, whomever is in a position where you believe they're needing assistance, you know, share a referral, share a contact, and just encourage and empower someone to get the support and assistance that they need. And we welcome, you know, volunteering, donations, all the above.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think one of the things that people don't understand is that organizations like Loaves and Fishes and Feeding Green have the ability to buy food for less money,
mm-hmm.
than you would buy it at retail. So donations, financial donations, go a long way, mm-hmm. go a lot longer, because we can buy from the food bank at a lower rate, if we're buying it all. Often we're getting it donated. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there's certain things we're not going to buy, like gummy bears, you know, but we get those for free. But, you know, but we're trying to source with that money the best nutritional food that we can and get it for folks when they need it. So I think, I mean, it's always volunteers and money. It's always volunteers and money. But I love that Emily suggested a referral. Mm-hmm. Or offer to go get food for someone.
Right.
You know, mm-hmm. if they can't get there. Although I will say, with a proxy, with somebody coming to pick up on somebody else's behalf, they often don't know what they want. So it does help when you can see or you can participate, mm-hmm. in the process. And, you know, I use the story that when Relay Foods was still in business, I used to shop from them. And then I didn't like the way they picked my lettuce. So I stopped, you know, shopping with them because I wanted to touch it myself. Mm-hmm. And people are like that. That's why they love coming and client. You know, they want to smell it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's.
Yeah. And having access to food, that is like just a right of being a human in the world, right? Is having food to eat. And that is. And yes, there's obstacles strewn throughout for many people in order to get to that point, but that is your undeniable right as a human being, and there are people and resources that care and want to create that connection for you.
And I think the connection piece is important also, you know, to come and sure, someone can deliver your food, but when you go and get it yourself, you interact with all these people who are...
There's the social...
There is that, and that's really important, too. Yeah, yeah. Hannah, I think it would be a great opportunity to share the Food Finder resource.
Yeah, I was thinking. Just about to plug some of Lisa, your hard work on the Seville Area Feeds. So there's two great resources to get to know your area of what food resources are in your area, whether you're in a rural community or you're in downtown Charlottesville, or if you're interested in getting involved, volunteering, donating, any other aspect. The Seville Area Feeds, which maybe we can include that in the is a great resource and link. It has a map. It has a translatable website where it tells you what to expect when you're going to go to a food pantry, what to expect when you're going to have certain USDA foods, you have to have a certain income, what that looks like, and then who to call. There's a number for most of them. There's directions on how to get there. And even if you don't need access to that food or you don't have capacity to volunteer, knowing what those resources look like so that you can share them with your community. And I feel like I really enjoy personally getting to know where the food pantries are so that I can tell other people and be like, oh my God, this is your local food pantry. Have you thought about that? You should get to know them. And then the other resource that it covers 22 counties rather than the 5 counties surrounding Charlottesville, down to Buckingham and up past Green to Madison, is the Blue Ridge Area Food Bank Food Finder. So they also have a map and access and translatable resources with covering the 22 counties up to Winchester and down to Lynchburg and then over the mountain as well into Stanton. And so that's really good if you're outside of that, if you're outside of the Seville Area Feeds network of those 5 counties, that's a really great resource. And there's also these feeds websites that coalitions across Virginia have also created. So there's one for Lynchburg Area Feeds, there's one for Loudoun, and everyone's working on something. So getting connected that way is a really great way to find out what's in your area and then serve your community.
Yeah, thanks.
And call.
And call.
You know, I will say we get more phone calls about, I don't know how this works.
Mm-hmm.
That's the first step, just admitting that you need help, mm-hmm. you know, and then we'll walk mm-hmm. you through it. We'll register you right there on the phone.
Yeah.
We'll tell you how it works. We'll tell you who to ask for. We'll tell you what days to come if you speak another language, you know, so we really
And if you know someone
that
could use the help, call and find out the information.
Find out the information.
We have our whole intake, all the questions printed out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, families can take it into the home of an elderly person or anyone that has the need and help them fill it out and get it back to us, and we can get them in the system and get them going.
Mm-hmm.
And if you've gone to a pantry as someone in need of food or someone picking up food, you can always go and volunteer later. I think that's something that and every pantry has their own rules and thoughts on what you're doing. But if you are picking up for someone and you get a handle of what's going on in that pantry and you're like, oh, that was really close, or this is something I can get to whenever your hours are open, they would love to get to know you and see you working with them. People serving people in the same condition are going to be the most empathetic and have experience. So that's great.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I want to wrap it up. Thank you for your time, but I wanted to give everyone an opportunity. If there's something that we didn't talk about that you want to bring up and talk about, and then also end by telling people how they can contact you, your website, and we will put everything on the podcast so everyone can find it.
I failed to mention that Loaves and Fishes actually has a full-time dietitian on staff, which has turned out to be kind of a valuable piece for a lot of people, because we do get a lot of referrals from UVA, and having that person just be able to calm you down through your dietary restrictions. We had a woman who actually came last week, and she
was hoping he would be there. Well, he was off over the weekend, but I was able to talk to him while he was away and figure out exactly what we needed to give her. So, you know, these very restrictive diets, you have to give the right stuff or they won't eat it. And so it really makes a difference to have that perspective. And I know, you know, it's hard to get. It's hard to have somebody give you that guidance. There's simple guides. And of course, you can Google anything and AI will give you an answer these days. But, you know, knowing what, when somebody comes and says, I have this kind of diet, knowing what to respond to is huge. And I personally will never forget the day that a gentleman came and he still had his feeding tube in. And he said, I happen to need feeding liquid. I've just been discharged. Why his feeding tube was still in, I'm not quite sure, but we happen to have it. We happened to have what he needed, the nutritional supplement. So we try to accommodate those unusual dietary things. We try to accommodate unhoused people, but that's super hard because we give a lot of fresh stuff. And if you don't have a refrigerator, how are you going to keep it fresh? Unless you eat it all right now. So, and we're open 4 days a week and have somebody who speaks other languages. Somebody speaks Spanish at all four distributions. And Dari and Pashto and Arabic on Wednesdays and Thursdays.
That's amazing. Wow. And how can people find your, what's your website?
Our website, which not everybody uses, is sevillefoodpantry.org. Our phone number is 434-996-7868. And we are more than happy to talk through the situation in English and in Spanish.
Yeah, that's amazing. Great. Thank you.
So the only thing, other thing I wanted to say was, What we have come to see is that some of the neediest families will never ask for help. Mm-hmm. So if you can just be an advocate for some of those families, you know, try to get food to them. We've been successful getting into the Mennonite community in our county because the, you know, they will not ask for help. They see it as government assistance, which is against their beliefs. But we actually have one person that shops for, oh, she's got a list of like 20 to 30 people. Right. And she shops for them and takes it to them. So she's got a special time on Fridays that she comes in and shops. And that's how we reach it. So, and I can tell you from looking at the information on those families, they are absolutely some of the neediest families mm-hmm. that we serve. Wow. So just being an advocate and trying to get help to people, even if it's in a discreet way, just, you know, that's what we're here to do, is try to get food to the people that need it the most. And you can reach us. Our phone number is 434-985-3663. It spells food, so 985-FOOD. And our website is feedinggreenwithanenc.org.
So I encourage everyone to check out our jobacares.org website, look at our community center calendars, read a bit more about the Home Delivered Meals program, and check out all that we have to offer. You know, I invite you to call our senior helpline too, and I'm sure that number will be posted in the note for this podcast, because even if you aren't quite sure exactly, you know, where to start or what question to ask or who might be the right partner or agency to speak with, the individual on the line and will know exactly where to refer you to and offers just some initial information to make sure that you feel equipped and know what next steps to take. If anyone out there is interested, possibly, or entertaining the idea of learning more about our community center programs, where not only you can have a nutritious meal and access to resources and information like these wonderful agencies at the table with us, please consider coming or taking a day to check it out, talk with one of our center supervisors, talk with someone at the senior helpline, and get some more information about these programs, because I can guarantee firsthand witness of being a part of these center programs and coming and talking with those who attend, the outcomes of their participation and access to these resources is pretty wonderful to view and observe, and certainly has been a wonderful benefit. So, yeah. Check us out.
Mm-hmm. And then if you want to get involved or find out more about Move to Health Equity. We have a website, which I won't spell out, but it will be in the photo.
Yes, it will be.
And then for access to food, maps about food, finding connections in your area, check out SeavilleAreaFeeds.org or the Blue Ridge Area Food Bank's Food Finder, which is BRAFB.foodfinder.org, which will also be in the show notes description. And as well as an email address. We unfortunately don't have a phone number, but we will have an email. So
okay, wonderful. Well, thank you all so much for this conversation. It's such an important conversation to have, and just the contribution you are making to take care of our community. We really appreciate you taking your time to be here. I could have actually talked for the rest of the afternoon. It's so there's so much important information, but thank you. And to our viewers, thank you for listening, and until next time, thank you.